You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. You can throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall. And recently my boss here at Locked On Podcast Network asked me if Chris was still a part of the show for how often that he is not with me. And he is not with me today. Chris is still part of the show. I think we're going to keep him through the draft and make the transition to T-Wig immediately after. Not a slight on T-Wig at all, but more so that Chris has studied this draft with me for a couple of months, so we don't want the transition to happen like the week before the draft when we've got pretty solid chemistry on what this class is appearing to be. But right after that is around when T-Wig is planning to start. I had to introduce him to what a video gaming headset was the other day so he can record with me and get pretty good audio. Everything's starting to get, you know, figured out for him there. But to replace Chris today, it's Philip Friday. So Philip Preuss is with me. I stole him away from having to go and do 5 scouting reports today for his more important job. But he's with me today to talk about the Jaguars and the upcoming draft for the segment we call Philip Friday. Ba-doom, 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 Philip Friday.
Wow, we're doing this. Okay.
I need to actually like make theme music for this. Phil, say what's up to the people.
Hey, everyone. I don't know what to say after that.
It was a good enough intro.
I don't know if I deserve it. I don't know if I deserve more.
Well, our first, after our first Philip Friday, we had a review on iTunes, which, by the way, if you haven't done that, you're dead to me. Go and leave those 5 stars, get those ratings up. We finally got past 4.0 to 4.5 stars on our 69th rating. It's like the nicest thing ever. As much as I love that, though, I want to get to 5 stars and I want to hear more from you guys. So make sure to go leave those. But after our first Philip Friday episode, we immediately got a review saying, like, this is great. Keep Philip Fridays going. A lot of inside info and insight that we love to hear. Keep it up. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing this, you know, beyond just draft time.
Well, I'm glad you got my review.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I'm just kidding. I don't even know how to do that.
What is in iTunes? All right, so we got a bit of a show for you today. We're going to be talking about offensive line in the first segment. In the second segment, what were we planning on talking about again? Because I was just really excited for the first segment that ever. Defensive backs and defensive players in the second round. That's what we were going to talk about. And then the third segment, we're going to do a top 10 mock draft for both of us. See, like the first and third segments are what excites me, and the second one, you know, it's whatever. But we do have some content for you in all three, so make sure to stick around. We're going to go ahead and get right to it. A lot of mock drafts insinuating the Jaguars are going to go Jawan Taylor, another Florida Gator. Their third in 4-5 years, something like that.
Worked out so well. Let's keep doing it.
Yeah, it really has worked out well. I'm not one to typically scout the logo, but the prospect.
No, I'm just being the worst.
But, well, it's okay because we've had the worst luck when it comes to taking Florida prospects. When it's all said and done, it's just kind of interesting to see that. The only one that's really panned out so far is Fred Taylor.
Obviously, Fred Taylor ain't walking through that door.
You don't need me to tell you what Fred Taylor did for this franchise, but I can tell you that Dante Fowler was a bust for this franchise. Derek Harvey was a bust for this franchise. Taven Bryan, you know, the jury is out on right now because he's got to make the transition back to 3-tech, but his first year was not great. So, you know, the hopes are pretty low when it comes to Florida Gators turning into Jacksonville Jaguars and making that hour 45-minute commute from Gainesville to Jacksonville. But Taylor is a guy that is getting slotted to Jacksonville a lot. I've watched some of his tape. My profile is not done yet. I still have another game that I want to get through, but I'm through the Georgia game, and I am through the Florida State game. I do not see the violence in his game that so many people are saying that he provides, makes him a nasty road grading tackle. I see some more in the run game than I see in pass sets, but, you know, passing is the bread and butter of today's NFL. I saw him get You know, he didn't allow anything bad to happen versus Florida State, versus Brian Burns, but I didn't see ideal top 10 right tackle reps against Brian Burns, who, yes, is also probably going in the top 10 as well, but weighed at that time 100 pounds less than Juwan Taylor, you know, coming in off the edge against someone that's supposed to be a right top 10 right tackle. I didn't see the violence. I didn't see, like, the holy shit, that's a win of a rep from Taylor that people are advertising him for. I just saw, you know, solid, good right tackle play, but it's not something that I would feel a lot of confidence in using a top 10 pick on.
Yep.
I know Phil hasn't done a full profile yet on Taylor either. We're going to focus a lot more on info and dot connecting today with them too. And I have him, I spoiled it, them too. We're going to talk about another offensive line prospect that I think we both like a little bit more. And I do want to headline it is that we haven't finished grading them out yet. We've seen, you know, I've seen some full game tape on Taylor. I still have to do some work on Jonah Williams. But I mean, we've seen them both playing live. It is going to be more dot connecting here, but I wanted to get that out of the way. My thoughts on Juwan Taylor, just I'm not feeling the love with the value at seventh overall right now. Whereas, you know, I think there's some hope for Jonah Williams. Phil pointed out some really key points to me on Williams.
Key points. I see what you did there.
I was wondering if you were going to get that, and I totally didn't just do that on accident.
Yeah, okay.
So Tony Pauline, draft analyst, has come out and reported that Jacksonville really likes Jonah Williams for whatever that's worth at this point. Juwan Taylor has a visit lined up with Jacksonville, but no one's come out and said the same thing with Taylor and Jacksonville as Pauline did with Williams. There are some relationships and, you know, reasons to think Williams could be really intriguing to Jacksonville that Philip has pointed out to me in the past. So I'm going to let you have the floor here because I've kind of been ranting a bit.
Yeah, no problem. And before we get to Williams, just back to Taylor for a second. I cover the Big 12, so I've seen probably every Big 12 game this year three times each, you know? So that's what I do for Optimum Scouting in the XFL. So any SEC games, I ended up watching five or six Florida games this year, but I was, you know, watching them leisurely and not actually studying any particular player. But with that being said, with the top 10 pick, you would really like for that player to pop off the screen. And having watched five or maybe six Gators games this year, I never really noticed Juwan Taylor, and maybe that's a good thing because that means he wasn't letting, you know, a ton of pressures go through, but that also means that I didn't, you know, see him pop off the screen with, you know, a big block downfield or anything like that. So, and the other thing too is I think from what I understand is a lot of the hardcore Gators fans are equally baffled that Juwan Taylor is being rated so high, and you know, these are fans that really like to pump up their players. So I would love to see, you know, a little bit more from Juwan Taylor. But going back to Jonah Williams, a big theme this offseason, especially every time that Doug Marrone talks, has been mentioning the opinion and the trust level with his inner circle and the people he trusts most. And, you know, he talked to Jim Schwartz about the Tim Walton hiring. He had a relationship with George Warhop. He leans really heavily on, you know, people that have daily contact with, you know, any decision that's going to affect the organization. So a big connection that I realized, and this is something that I remembered when we took Cam Robinson in the second round, is that the assistant offensive line coach at the time under Mario Cristobal was a guy named Brent Key. And Brent Key actually ended up taking over as the primary offensive line coach after Mario Cristobal left. And so he's been working with Jonah Williams on a daily basis. Now, even more interestingly, Brent Key was the starting right guard at Georgia Tech under Doug Marrone. back from 1996 to 1999. So they have a really good relationship, and they've known each other for a long time. So I would imagine that, you know, Doug would really lean on his opinion. And from everything that I've gathered and what I understand about Jonah Williams is intangibles off the field. You might not find a better prospect on the offensive line, maybe Dalton Risner, but Jonah Williams is legit. This is a guy that built a gym in his parents' house in Atlanta at the age of 12. And he probably
Grit.
Has a bubble. Yeah. He probably has a bubble gum shrine of Joe Thomas in his closet too. For any Hey Arnold fan out there, he like worships Joe Thomas. And that's kind of who he models his game after, because they both have a little bit shorter arms coming out. I think Jonah's just short of 34 inch arms, but the reason I would like that pick better over Juwan Taylor is because the floor is so much higher. Jonah Williams did play right tackle his freshman year at Alabama, and all he did that year was earn freshman All-American honors playing at right tackle. So the worst case scenario with Jonah Williams is if he doesn't pan out at right tackle, say Will Richardson beats him out in a camp battle, that's a high class problem, right? Because that means that Will Richardson was performing very well. All of a sudden you can kind of shift Jonah Williams inside. His size thresholds and profile are better suited for NFL guard anyway. And you can have a really, really prolific right side of the offensive line.
I definitely agree. And I think one thing that's going to be really important, two things that could be really important for the Jaguars this offseason, despite them clear, they seem to have a type when it comes to the offensive line. Demetrius Harvey of Locked On Jaguars is putting together a huge project on just about every offensive line prospect there is this year to find who really fits the Jaguars mold. It's great. It's going to be coming out within the next week, I would assume. He's waiting for all pro days to finish up to get official measurements. But when it comes to tackle, they have a size threshold. They don't really seem to break it much. They broke it last year signing Eric Flowers off the streets, and he only had a half-inch shorter arm than any guy that Doug Marrone has ever brought in. Jonah Williams is way below those thresholds. But you have to think that, you know, Doug Marrone's job is on the line, as well as all of these other guys. Like, you got to think that if the pure talent is there, if what you said about how he's been talking about the guys he trusts, the relationships he has, are that important to him, that if he's getting all this positive feedback on Williams, to get a guy who's been available for 3 years, that's one of the most important things this offseason, is availability. They've stressed that. The best ability is availability, and that did not turn out well at all in 2018 with the injuries on the offensive line. So 3 year starter, don't believe he missed any time or very minimal time, if anything. And versatility, because they have, realistically, you could say they have needs on the right guard and right tackle part of the offensive line. We both believe in Will Richardson, but I wouldn't be opposed to someone competing with Richardson either. Well, Williams does have the size threshold to play right guard here. He's actually bigger than AJ Cann in most aspects of Cann's game. So you have a guy that comes in, and yeah, he breaks your type a bit, but he's a real, you know, lunch pail guy, almost, as we like to call him. Blue collar. Comes in, competes at right tackle, and if you decide, hey, like, we do love the value of Richardson and we think he can play right tackle, then you move Williams to guard, and that's a good problem to have at that point.
Yeah, and he's a really smart, engaging, and charismatic guy, if you listen to him talk. And I think a big theme of this draft class that we're going to see once they start picking players is they're going to put such a huge emphasis on that, because I floated out the question the other day, like, outside of Nick Foles, who's the captain on offense for this team? And sure, you get answers like Marquise Lee or Brandon Linder, but is that ideal? Because
right,
we've all heard how quiet Brandon Linder is. He doesn't really talk that much. Marquise Lee might only have one knee. no one's going to listen to him right now until he can get back on the field and contribute, because that's equally important to earning respect. So they really need to change the culture, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And Jonah Williams is a culture changer, if you take into consideration character and background and how he can influence the locker room. Whereas Juwan Taylor is kind of like a how would you describe him? Like a mellow kind of one answer guy, you know?
That's exactly what he was when he did an interview with me probably a month ago here on Locked On Jaguars.
Mm-hmm. So,
probably the shortest interview we've ever done. And I'm not knocking him for that because, you know, you can't ask everyone to be overly social. But
no,
it's the Jaguars making the pick, and if they,
and it's a top
they
seven
probably,
pick,
and they have a, and they've got to have a preference. So
right,
I'm not going to judge him on that, but I'm not going to tell like I'm not going to discredit Jacksonville for judging guys on that. You know,
right? No, but it's such an important part of the evaluation process, and you know, it's probably the one thing that I've learned the past few years scouting for Optimum Scouting is just how important getting to know the person is and how they could impact the culture of the locker room. And I think the other thing that kind of concerns me about Juwan Taylor is he used to be a really big boy. He used to be close to 400 pounds, and he had to work his way down. He had tremendous weight issues going into Florida. So kudos to him for putting in the work and getting down to 312 pounds. But what happens when he gets life-changing money? Is he going to go out and eat every single weekend? Is he going to eat himself out of the league? These are, you know, it seems like we're in the weeds and nitpicking and in the nitty-gritty, but this is what scouts do. They really have to be comfortable with the player, especially if you're investing a premium pick like that.
And there's a guy in this class who sounds just like that, in Ole Udo, who was at 384 at his peak weight at Elon University. And I'm not saying that they're the same prospect, but we're talking about him as a day three, like, risk-reward type of prospect, whereas Taylor had the same concerns that have made Ole Udo a story, and he's a top 10 pick. So I get the nitpicking. Like, it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, you have to, because your job's on the line.
When we come back, we're going to move to the opposite side of the trenches, to the defensive line. As well as, you know, maybe some other defensive prospects. We've talked a lot about defense at 7. Phil would understand it more than I would. I'm not a fan of it whatsoever. But Jacksonville's having a top 30 visit with someone in the next week or so who could be there at 38, who would be that kind of Miles Jack Steel value type of guy on the defensive line, as well as maybe some other prospects they can consider there on the defensive side of the ball. We'll be back after these messages. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835. Or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835 and www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through New Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So, discussing at his pro day, he said he had a meeting lined up with the Jaguars. That means a top 30 visit. Defensive lineman, Jeffrey Simmons. And now he's not the only defensive lineman to have a top 30 visit with Jacksonville so far that's, you know, considered to be a top talent in this class. Quinnen Williams is another one. But Simmons is really interesting. You know, he had an injury that's going to cause him to slide. Phil, you've done probably more research on him than I have, but I obviously know the dude. He's been, you know, he wasn't able to compete at the combine. Originally, he was looking like he was going to be a top 10 pick. And if he's there at 38, you know, he's the type of talent that, you know, you're taking a bit of a risk with his injury, especially a team that is stressing availability, durability, and all that. But at the end of the day, if he's there at 38, I really think I would like taking him there more than I would like, you know, using a top 10 pick on a defensive player when you have a need. You could virtually say you have a need at every offensive position right now.
Yeah, and purely off of his tape and on-field evaluation, Jeffrey Simmons is absolutely a top 10 player in this class. Now he had the ACL injury. It was your typical run-of-the-mill ACL, no additional structural damage, nothing like that. And he's looking at playing for the tail end of this year. In addition to the injury concerns, there is some off-field issues, of course, that are well chronicled and well documented. I know 1010XL's Matt Hayes has spent a lot of time with him personally, and he's actually raved about Jeffrey Simmons and what type of person he is, and how he's really taken steps to kind of atone for that, and he doesn't think that it should be an issue for him at all. So he's going to slide. The question is, how far down is he going to slide? I still think it's a very good possibility he could get taken at the tail end of the first round. The Colts have also brought him in for a top 10 visit. But in terms of fit for this team, he would be great. Like you said, the Jaguars are obviously interested. They're bringing him in for a 30 visit. If he's there at 38, and if we haven't taken a defensive prospect at 7 overall, he's probably very much in play. And this is really an ideal landing spot for him. We don't have any depth really out after Taven Bryan at 3 technique right now. It's Lyndon Johnson. And he would be put in a situation where, guess what, he doesn't have to play right away or contribute because we've loaded up a little bit on the defensive line. So start the season out on PUP. Continue rehabilitation. He comes back October, November. Probably doesn't do that much to contribute, but at least you could start rotating him in. And maybe by the time, December comes around the playoffs, he could really start to be a X factor and be fresh and continue on that rotation. And you could have a really, really good player down the line.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where I'm starting to get ready to take those risks beyond the instant impact guy that you want at top 10. Like you said, the incident came from a while ago. I'm pretty sure that was before he even started at Mississippi State. But he's a talented player. I think Jim Nagy came out and said the other day that you couldn't tell him that there were 10 better players in this draft on tape. You might be able to find five. And for how loaded of defensive class it is, like at that point, if someone on tape, if you are past the concerns of his injury and he's there at 38, you consider it. Jacksonville did just that a couple years ago with Miles Jack. People thought that Jack was going to be their pick at five if Ramsey wasn't there, or at least be considered for it. Rick Ballew, when I was on 1010 the other night, actually came away with the idea that once they took Ramsey and he met with the team before the second day of the draft, he was absolutely convinced they were not going to take Miles Jack, and then they ended up taking him anyway. With that injury slide and everything, that's the concern he got, is he thought that they were not interested in him because of the injury, and they did. So it's something to keep in mind.
I think it's just purely going to depend on how the these personal meetings go, and if they can get comfortable. I know it's almost like hypocritical because we just talked about how we're going to really focus on character and positive locker room influence and all that stuff. But I think at some point the value outweighs the risk, right? And I think right around 38. Looking at the future health and viability of the Jaguars roster and the tough decisions they might have to make, especially if Marcell Dareus, who's definitely in his last year, unless he restructures or, gets cut and re-signs, going forward, you got to start thinking about that too. And he's a hell of a player. He's so good. And not too long ago, Daniel Jeremiah was mocking him at 7 to the Jaguars, if you remember that. Before his injury, so.
And Daniel Jeremiah is one of the most well-connected draft guys that there is out here. So it's something that we need to note. Now, there's going to be defenders that are falling compared to where people have them ranked. It's just, it happens every year, regardless of the talent, offense and defense, really. So then you have to factor in, just how crazy this defensive class is. Like, there's going to be guys getting pushed. So, like I've said, I'm more open to defense at 38 than I am at 7. Who are some other guys that you could see there with the 38th pick that you think they'd consider that maybe got pushed down a bit? Because I've got one, and it's Nasir Adderley, the free safety out of Delaware, who is pretty commonly mocked as a first-round guy, but his draft process has not been that great.
Yeah, he got hurt at his pro day, right?
Pro day
But
and I think before the combine too. And Senior Bowl, like, we both agree he was not doing playing where he needs to play at the Senior Bowl, but
no, he didn't stick out.
It wasn't great.
Right, he didn't stick out at the Senior Bowl, but then again, not a lot of those safeties stuck out, and you know, they're good safeties. The practices during the week at Mobile, for the actual week, aren't very conducive to really showing off the skill set of especially rangy safeties. Because then he went into the game and he had an interception during the game, and you're like, okay, there's the guy, you know, that we've heard and so much about. But by all accounts, really, really high intangibles for Nasir Adderley. Would immediately come in and be a tone setter on the secondary. He's a very rangy free safety. He was formerly a cornerback. He actually went to the coaching staff at Delaware and told them, hey, I know I'm a cornerback. I've been playing cornerback, but based on graduations and the way our depth chart looks like, I think I could be more of a help to the team if I've moved over to free safety. And that's the kind of guy that you like to have on your team, right? That selfless guy who's going to do what's best. Even though, you know, he would have made more money at cornerback because it's a more premium position. You know, he wanted to do what's best for his team. So Nasir Adderley is definitely someone to consider. I think free safety in general is something to consider. What about Deontay Thompson if he slides there for some reason at 38? You could recreate the starting safeties for Alabama with him and Ronnie Harrison. Deontay Thompson has one of the best, the widest range that I've seen. A free safety is very rangy, got great ball skills. He's exactly who you want in a free safety, and he's not afraid to lower his shoulder and lay the boom. So I wouldn't be surprised actually if they ended up taking a free safety, but if they went defensive line seventh overall, I think back-to-back defensive picks, can you just imagine the backlash that we'd get, like, on Twitter?
I think it'd be deserved. I think yeah. I 100% think it'd be deserved, because as much as, you know, I want to improve this team as a whole, this team is not in the position where they need to try and galaxy brain or forward think here. Their window, I think that the Foles deal could nearly guarantee everyone 2 more years, because that just so happens to be when the contracts are all expired for the main guys in the
office. So happens to be when Dwayne takes over.
It so happens to be when Jason Lockenfora predicts us to move to London.
Well, if they sign Jay Ajayi, it's definitely happening.
But in all seriousness, I think that forward thinking, when you've got, like, there is a timetable and it could, you know, get cut short even. You are not in the position to be forward thinking that much. I think the backlash would be really deserved. And that's why I'm so adamant about that premier top 10 pick. I just think the offense needs so much help. You will not hurt yourself by even going at a position that's less of a need on offense than your biggest need on offense. You are still helping, you know, an offense that might not compete with a D2 defense.
Yep. And we're going to see, right? That first, that pick at number 7 is going to really dictate the pick at round 2, you know? So
right.
If they do end up taking a defensive lineman, you could probably cross Jeffrey Simmons off at the 38.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Everything's live in that scenario. I still think offensive line is the sweet spot at 38, not 7. But like we just talked about, if they feel really good about a guy like Jonah Williams and the type of attitude and change in culture he could bring to the offensive side of the locker room, then so be it. But it's going to ripple through for the rest of the draft.
When we come back, we're going to be opening things up a bit. We're going to do a top 10 pick mock draft. No trades, nothing like that. Based on what we think will happen. Mine isn't as much what we think will happen for the Jaguars pick, but I think I like the odds of the pick is what I'm saying. When we come back, we'll hit you with that. Kind of makes me want to do a full 32 pick mock, but maybe that's for another day. Top 10 when we come back from these messages. So yeah, I said that it'll be picks based on what we think will happen. I think for the most part, that's what mine looks like, at least. With Jacksonville's pick being a bit dark horse, but there's also links to it being legitimate. So I'll stick with that description. I know Phil's is pretty much to a T what he thinks will happen. If we did this the way we would want it to happen, or if we were GMs for each team, it might be a bit different. But Phil and I have been, you know, pretty adamant that we thought Kyler Murray was going to Arizona since the Senior Bowl. when it's all said and done. You know, we've tweeted about it. We've talked about it a lot. We've been believers in that being a possibility. It only sounds like it's starting to get confirmed at this point. Kyler to Arizona is my pick. And Phil, Kyler to Arizona is your pick, correct?
Yep, and it's been my pick since February 11th. And it's my pick now. And I had a good idea this was going to happen.
Yeah, I've really believed in it for quite some time. When your boss, Eric Galco, came out and reported that on February 11th, 12th, I trust Eric a lot. I trust Eric's, you know, research on Dwayne Haskins that he's been talking about, which we didn't really talk about today. And maybe if more info comes out in the next week, we'll talk about that again. But Eric is a very well-connected guy. He's been all over this. I tell people when they ask me who he is that he's the one that broke the Khalil Mack trade like a month before it happened.
Yep.
So he's got a very good recent track record. He's doing a lot of great work now with Philip, obviously, working with the XFL. It's a lot of cool stuff. But enough shout-outs. Let's get to the second pick of the draft. It's really freaking obvious. Nick Bosa, San Francisco 49ers. They need edge help. I've seen people talk about them maybe going Quinn and Williams if Bosa went one. I think they've got enough talent on their interior where you just take the best available edge guy, because Solomon Thomas has not panned out the way they wanted that Leo position to work there.
No, but they do have Dee Ford. So I will definitely – I have Nick Bosa as well, but I'm not making it a slam dunk like a lot of mocks are doing. I'd say probably like a 75-25% split with Quinn and Williams being the other guy, because I think a couple of those guys in that front office are really split right now. And would love to see what this defensive line would look like with Quinn and Williams and DeForest Buckner on the interior.
Yeah, but I also think you can't go wrong with Bosa and Ford as, you know, two guys, you know, as a tandem almost. Because I think Solomon Thomas ideally is probably a nickel player. I didn't love the idea of playing him outside when he was coming out because I didn't love his skill set there. I didn't love the idea of playing him inside because he's incredibly small to play inside. It was so much projecting at that point. It doesn't seem to have worked out. But you know, having Bosa and Ford as your bookends almost, Thomas rotating, you've got Buckner inside. I'm blanking. There's another player that they'd play inside as well.
For the Niners?
Yes, for the Niners.
Eric Armstead, DJ Jones, Sheldon Day, Julian Taylor.
They've got some talented players on their defensive line, but they do need that slam dunk guy as well. And you couldn't go wrong with either Williams or Bosa being slam dunk, but it's almost salivating the idea of Bosa and Ford as bookends to each other.
No, absolutely. And like I said, it's still 75% the pick, right? But right. But if there is any divisiveness in the conversations going on inside, don't even rule out, like, maybe they trade down a couple spots with Oakland and Oakland moves up to take Bosa, something like that, if they are torn. And if they feel like Quinn and Williams is going to be there at four, maybe they could pick up some extra draft capital, move down a couple spots, take him instead, pick up some extra draft picks, and then Oakland can, you know, fill that hole by Khalil Mack.
You make a fair point. Let's move to the Jets. Guy who's been mocked to the Jets for as long as I can remember. Josh Allen. The good Josh Allen. edge player out of Kentucky. You know, they said they don't want to change the defensive scheme with Greg Williams in-house. I'm sure there's going to be some versatility added to it with some 4-3 looks, which, you know, made me think that maybe they could look beyond Allen and look for a 4-3 end more, because there's a lot of projection that he's going to be a 3-4 guy. But Allen really proved himself this past year at Kentucky. Everyone's talked about the story about his kid that he had, you know, taking the risk to go back and earn a higher draft slot, and he did just that. I don't think he's falling out of the top five. It just seems like it's always been a perfect fit there.
Yeah, and Greg Williams has said he's going to keep a 3-4 base, but Greg Williams isn't always the most forthright person either. So they're probably going to run a lot of multiple fronts, and that's why makes Josh Allen so interesting there is because he's so versatile, 262-pound guy who could drop back into coverage if he has to. He can go downhill, rush the passer, and arrive with violence if he has to. So that pick makes a lot of sense. I think they would love to trade down because they've made that painfully obvious over the course of the last month, and they want to probably recoup that second rounder that they've lost to the Colts. But Josh Allen's that's my pick as well as of right now. And but boy, I think it's going to be hard for them to pass on Quinnen Williams too, with Leonard Williams' contract about to expire.
I would do a lot of things to land Leonard Williams, but that's besides the point. Also, imagine a pairing of Williams and Williams on your interior. That woo.
Well, buddy, I got bad news for you. They took Dante Fowler.
Let's move on before I cry. Quinnen Williams, we have actually, you know, I had him sliding a bit to 5, but I guess I need to tell you why he slides to 5 for me. That's because I have Devin White going to Oakland. I mean, it would be a total John Gruden and Mike Mayock thing to take an off-ball linebacker above elite pass rushing talent at this point in a guy like Williams and a guy like Brian Burns, even a project like Rashawn Gary, etc. Ed Oliver, even. And I know that, you know, maybe Oliver could be the guy for Oakland as well, but it would seem like such an Oakland move. But also, I mean, it fills an immediate need at linebacker. They do have some, you know, some nice players on their interior with Mo Hurst, who fell there last year, fell so far because of health concerns, but he's a good player. I also think that, I mean, they could use help just about anywhere on that defense, but having a, you know, a really freaking athletic linebacker come in, it sounds like something that John Gruden would do, you know?
Yeah, Devin White's definitely someone to consider. Maybe a little less likely with the recent signings of Brandon Marshall, Vontaze Burfict, and they already have Tahir Whitehead. So it seems like maybe they're going to go with the patching route for this year. Marshall and Burfict, both one-year deals, I believe. I don't think that would really preclude them from taking a guy like Devin White if they had him evaluated very highly. I have Ed Oliver right here. I think that's a guy that they will really like. I think they will like the versatility. They can line him up at left defensive end, although it wouldn't be the best use of his talent and skill set. I think they could put him inside as well, closer to the ball. They'll like that versatility. They'll like that elite athletic score that he just put in with his pro day yesterday. I know that there's a lot of concern with his agent being Joel Siegel and not exactly getting along with Mark Davis, but at some point that shunning is going to have to be lifted because, hey, Siegel represents a lot of players in the league, and you can't be that petty to, you know, basically, you know, alienate yourself from half the players in the NFL just because of a petty feud. So I have Ed Oliver there myself.
Then we move on to the 5th pick, Quinnen Williams for me for Tampa. There's reports out there that he's their guy if he ends up falling to 5. For the longest time, it was almost like a guaranteed 1-2 of Bosa and Williams, but there's recently been some idea that Williams could slip. Dude is, to me, almost as surefire as Nick Bosa. He's going to come in and be wreaking havoc among your interior. Tampa could use that, in which case, you know, they could save some money because Lord knows they need to in letting Gerald McCoy go, because I think they're last in cap space in the NFL right now. And
yeah, they're struggling for cap space.
And they're so far removed from being able to compete right now.
Yeah, and I agree with you on all fronts. I also have Quinnen Williams there and Gerald McCoy getting his walking papers, if that's the case, and saving some money moving forward.
Now we look at New York. A lot of people think they should go quarterback. A lot of people think they won't because it's Dave Gettleman. We both have them going defensive end. I think we have different guys going there. You mentioned something to me earlier about, and this was off air, about Dave Gettleman having a type at defensive end. They have to replace Olivier Vernon's pass rushing role. They want to get younger on the defensive line right there. I have them taking Rashawn Gary. A bit of a project, but a guy with a really high RAS, like you pointed out. On a scale of, I believe it's full blown 0 to 10. Gary is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth highest rated RAS in the
athlete,
class
yep.
as of right mm-hmm. now at a 9.94. So that's got to be appealing to them. There's a couple of defensive ends that are also in that range that they could consider, and you've got another one.
Yeah, I have Montez Sweat going there to be a direct replacement for Olivier Vernon. I know they drafted Lorenzo Carter last year, and looking at Lorenzo Carter's profile, he had a perfect 10.0 RAS. So everybody knows what Sweat did at the combine, and he would probably be a good hybrid, you know, defensive end, edge rusher in that 3-4 system and James Betcher's system to come down and crash and rush the passer.
Now we move on to Jacksonville's pick. And like I said, for the most part, we're keeping this as to what they will do or what we think they will do. In which case, I kept it at the same position that I think they will inevitably target. But I didn't go Juwan Taylor. I went with the guy that we gave you all the reasoning for to start this show, Jonah Williams. The report that they like him. The relationship with Brent Key and Doug, I mean, essentially when you connect all of these dots, you could pretty much say that Doug Marrone and Jonah Williams are related. But in all seriousness, getting that guy that just, you know, almost screams what they want out of someone that they're drafting this high in this crucial a situation as the lunch pail guy, blue collar, versatility, availability, the report out there that they like him, the relationship that Doug has. I like that more than I like taking Juwan Taylor. Still have to do my profile on Williams as well as finish my one on Taylor. I can say pretty confidently that I'm not a big fan of Taylor at 7, and all of these dots to connect on top of the live watching of Williams, I'd say that I think I'd prefer that at this point.
Yep, and I have Dwayne Haskins, and I ain't changing my mind. You could call me stubborn, whatever, but a captain goes down with the ship. And I know you mentioned Galco went on the podcast with Sigmund Bloom the other day. It was actually really interesting. He put Haskins to the Jags at 75% to 80%, and I know Eric, and that's kind of that's interesting for him to put a number out on that. So the thing with taking him, like, who's really going to be mad? Like, almost all of local media has already said that they would take him if he fell, including Lagerman just yesterday on Jaguars Happy Hour said it again. If Haskins is there, I'm taking him. Mike Dempsey, Osier, everyone in the local media would be fine with it. I think at least, what would you say, 80% of fans would be fine with it? 75%?
I think so. Whenever I talk about it on Twitter, I get a couple responses saying that it would be a dumb thing to do to the confidence of Nick Foles, which I'm not concerned about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Foles is that type of guy.
Right.
Whatsoever. And I don't think Haskins is that type of guy to be upset with coming in and getting Aaron Rodgers with a long-term plan.
He's already said it. I listened to Daniel Jeremiah's Move to Six 360 podcast on Haskins. First off, Sean Springs, who's known him since he was 12 years old, compared him to Philip Rivers, which I thought was a really interesting comparison. And he even said that he feels it would be best for Haskins to take a seat for at least a year. And Haskins himself has said that he would have no issue. He sat for 2 years at Ohio State. You didn't hear a peep from him. I think it would be the same thing if he landed in this locker room. And here's the thing. It seems like, in the estimation of the front office, that the backup quarterback position is fairly unsettled. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I mean, okay. They haven't talked about it, and they're talking about they're typically pretty clear with what they want to do when they say it. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, if they're dedicated to a player at a position and they come out and say that, they don't typically come out and shock you. In a sense.
So it's very possible and probable that they're going to invest in a quarterback at some point in the draft, right?
Yeah.
If a guy like Will Greer is going to go high, like, you know, a lot of the momentum has him going a lot higher now after his pro day. if a guy like Ryan Finley's around in the third round, you'd have to think that they might have some interest in a player like that because he's very similar to Nick Foles, right? They're almost like the same person if you look at them. I know they met with like Tyree Jackson at the combine. So my question is this: if you're going to come away with, you know, offensive lineman and a quarterback, wouldn't you you're going to come away with those positions? Would you rather have it be Dwayne Haskins and, you know, someone in the third round, someone different? Would you rather have, for example, TJ Hockenson and Ryan Finley, or would you rather have Dwayne Haskins and Foster Moreau? You know?
Right.
It becomes a question of that. So if you really, really like a quarterback and you really, you know, think that he could be a culture changer and a future long-term stabilizer and give you flexibility, because I could tell you right now, they do not want to pay Foles $27.5 million in year three. Now, if he's performing and they're going deep into the playoffs, then of course, right? But that's not ideal because then if you're paying all that money to that position, you are really hamstringing yourself for extending your other good players on the defensive side of the ball, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to stick with my guns there. I know I'm not delusional. I know it's probably not going to happen, but at least no one's going to, you know, accuse me of waffling on my convictions, and I'm going to go down with the ship.
Let's move on to the eighth overall pick now. The Lions are, even after signing Trey Flowers, they've got work to do on the defensive line, on offense. I know I've read one of your mocks in the past, and I've seen the idea of them in 2020 starting to look at quarterbacks. So this team could be, you know, on the verge of either building and turning things around or in the rebuild sense. And I've got them double dipping with the pass rushers. I've got obviously the Trey Flowers signing, and I've got them taking Brian Burns, edge out of Florida State. I don't think that's a really popular pick right now. I've not really seen it, but you made a point to me before we started recording about how they go about their opposite edge position, and it's kind of really interesting as to what the position entails.
Yeah, they got a kind of a quirky defensive scheme under Matt Patricia, where they have, you know, a stout edge rusher on one side, which they already addressed with Trey Flowers, and on the opposite side they have what's called kind of like a jack position, where it's kind of a hybrid defensive end linebacker. So a guy like Josh Allen is like prototypical, made in a lab, perfect for that position. Right now it's being played by Devon Kennard. If Josh Allen somehow fell to number eight, I think the Lions would stumble over themselves turning the pick in, because that would be a perfect opposite edge threat across from Trey Flowers. But I have Rashawn Gary there now. I know he's a little bit bigger than ideal for a role like that. 277 pounds. Josh Allen's 262 pounds, and they're very similar athletes. If they needed him to, I'm sure Gary could lose, you know, 5-10 pounds and get a little bit closer to that profile, and only get a little bit quicker and faster. So, and he wouldn't have to move very far playing at Michigan.
On to the Buffalo Bills. I have a guy that, you know, people are starting to think he's really going to slide. And a year ago, a lot of people thought he could be the number one overall pick. Ed Oliver out of Houston, freak athlete. His pro day confirmed that. He ran, I believe it was a better short shuttle than Aaron Donald did. I'm not in the business of saying he'll be Aaron Donald. I don't do that with prospects being the next best player at their position, potentially like ever, for their type. But Oliver can come in and be a dominant, you know, wreak havoc on the interior. Buffalo desperately needs that. I don't think that he should fall out of the top 10. Whether he will and whether he should are two different stories, but I've got him sliding there to 9, and that feels like it's a bit too far of a slide in the first place.
Yep, I think they're all over at Oliver. Sean McDermott was front and center at the pro day yesterday. I think he would basically, now that Kyle Williams is retired, he would basically emulate that Kwon Short 3 technique that he had in Carolina, and I think he would be really successful in that defensive front. Since Ed Oliver's gone in my rendition of this mock here, I'm going Jawan Taylor there, so they can shore up the right tackle spot. I know they've met with him a few times and seems like someone that's high on their board.
Then we go to 10th overall, the Denver Broncos, and we kind of locked this pick in many months ago.
You're on a roll today.
Drew Lock, quarterback, Missouri. I mean, even John Elway's kind of joked about the idea of him being all over Drew Lock when he's been asked about it, because the reports have been surfacing since before the freaking Senior Bowl, much less at the Senior Bowl when he was there.
Yeah, and those are the reports that typically tend to be right. You know, the ones that kind of get out way ahead of the process. So Ben Albright's been on it for a long, long time, that seems to be their guy. I would not rule out Oakland taking Drew Lock at 4. Gruden coached him at the Senior Bowl. He really seemed to like him. I think that could be a really out of left field dark horse pick that kind of throws a wrench into this whole thing, right? And can you just imagine Elway's face when Lock goes to a division rival right after the pick's announced? He'd probably be so furious.
He might
would be
off
hilarious.
Himself on the spot.
He would be you know, just so mad. So I also have Lock here, but on my board, Devin White's still available, and I think they think really hard about Devin White as well, but you can't pass on the franchise quarterback if he's there, especially one that they seem to like since day one.
And that should just about do it for our mock draft for today's episode of Locked On Jaguars. I'm thinking we need to do, before the draft starts, a full first-round mock draft, as well as a full Jaguars 7-round one here. At some point, we'll get both of those done. Phil, thanks for joining me today.
You got to see you, buddy.
And we will catch up with you guys next time. Make sure to subscribe anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can find Locked On Jaguars.